Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you very much for joining us. It's just noon, so we will start today's question and answer session. Thank you for joining us, and thanks for all of you who sent in your questions. My name is Peter Rooney. I'm here in Albany at the New York State Education Department. I have with me today Charlene Swanson of the State Department, Joy Goods of the State Education Department. Online also is Tom Kamiga, the project manager for our statewide data repository. Marlene Dominio is on the line. Marlene is the representative of the official representative of the regional information centers and also our project manager for the Level Zero application. And Katie Duhl has been kind enough to join us today and manage the web portion of our presentation. So thanks to all those folks for being on the line. And some of those folks may want to comment on your questions as we go along. What we have on the PowerPoint for you is the questions that you submitted word for word. We just cut and pasted them. So they're your questions. They're roughly in the order in which we received them. But because many of them have a few things in common, I would like to start by just some high-level comments that might help as we go through the questions. There are a lot of questions about, do we use this assessment, do we use that assessment? Suppose a kid takes a Regents and fails it and takes it again, and those the things along those lines. There are a lot of questions about teacher evaluation and whether this assessment is going to be used for the evaluation or that assessment is going to be used for the evaluation. What I'd like to focus on is we're just being joined by Jeff Baker, our data coordinator here in Albany. What I'd like to focus on is this, your data reporting requirement. And let's just look at that for a moment, because in large part, while your data is going to be used in the context that we just mentioned, you don't really have much control over that, nor do you report data related to that. And by that, I mean the following. You've seen our Appendix A. Appendix A is a list of statewide course codes. That is available in a memo that Ken Wagner sent out recently. You've probably seen it in the SIRS manual. It's also on the state website. You are going to report to us, the teachers and students, by section, that are involved in the courses that are in those Appendix A. And that's pretty much it. That's what you are sending us, the teachers and the students in Appendix A. You're not sending us the assessment related to those. We get those in the normal course of events, and we'll make the association between those students and assessments to the extent that that association is needed. And secondly, keep in mind that for the 11-12 school year, the only teachers subject to evaluation are teachers teaching 4 through 8 ELA and math. That's by legislation. So what are you sending us? You're sending us students, teachers, by section, for those courses that are noted in the state course code catalog, which at this point is very limited. So with that as a backdrop, let's go through your questions. We'll take them one at a time and try to clarify them as best we can. Hold your additional questions for the end. We'll take any questions you may have after we go through the questions that were submitted in advance. Okay, first question, and we tried to do these roughly in the order in which we received them. We received some as recently as about an hour ago, and I think we're up to date. Is there a data template available for the new BOCES data requirements? The answer is yes. The complete set of templates is on our website in the SIRS section of the website, and you may go there and retrieve it. We also reviewed those templates in detail at our last conference call with your vendor systems. So your vendors should have those, but certainly they are available to you. Is the Level Zero program set up to receive the new data? No, they're working on it. We expect a deliverable for the Level Zero for the teacher-student course matching for 11-12 to be available in November. And as far as we know, that ETA is accurate, so we think it'll be online in November. When do the reporting requirements begin for the new data and what frequency? It's technically, once the Level Zero tool is in place, you could start uploading data if you chose to. You're probably not going to have to until the second semester of the 2011-12 school year, and the RICS will distribute an actual schedule when, in fact, those data are required. But technically speaking, if you had the data and wanted to try it, once the Level Zero tool is in place, you could start loading it. Should students who take an alternate assessment be counted? Now, this is along the lines of what I was saying in addition. You're not reporting assessments. You're reporting students and teachers that are in the courses that are assigned, that course list that we gave you. It turned out that a student in one of those courses ultimately took the alternate assessment. We would know that and use that data appropriately. But from your perspective, you don't need to make that decision. You need to simply take the course list that we have. To the extent that you're offering those courses, report to us in accord with the templates that we discussed earlier, the students and teachers that are in those courses. And again, you have an opportunity to ask questions at the end, so if I haven't made that clear, we'll be glad to go over it. The questions on the next slide are all fairly technical, so I'm going to turn those over to Tom Kamiga. Tom's title actually is the project manager for the state repository, but he actually acts in the larger role as kind of the chief technical officer of this entire project. And so, Tom, would you be so kind as to take those?
Thanks,
sure. At least the first few of those, Peter. The first one, I do want to make it clear that we are expecting the files to come in a comma-delimited format, not a fixed width, as the question one is referring to. And the comma-delimited can be quoted or unquoted. Typically, I think we ask for quoted, comma-delimited, but we can accept it without the quotes. And it should have a carriage control line feed at the end of each line. So that should answer question number one. Question number two, the templates have a couple of columns that indicate the maximum length. There's a maximum length for fixed width, and there's a maximum length for comma delimited. And since we're using the comma delimited, you should refer to the comma delimited lengths, not the max lengths for the fixed positions. And the starting positions and ending positions you don't need to worry about because you just need to provide them in the order that they're listed in the template. The other question would be related to this is that the lengths are, in some cases, for numeric values are reported as an example with a 3, 2. The 3 portion of that indicates the maximum length of the column. The 2 indicates the number of decimal places that we would accept.
Thank you, Tom. If there's any additional questions on that, I'm sure people will ask later, but that's very clear, and I appreciate it, Tom.
Okay. And number three, there are cases where we're asking for blank values. Leaving a blank means that you don't have to provide a value at all. I mean, you have to provide a space holder for it in the file layout, but you don't have to actually populate it with a value. If you put a blank in there, it'll be treated as though it's a null value when we load the data into the warehouse.
Thank you, Tom. Anything else on that? Thank you. Katie, you want to go to the next slide? Please provide clarification reporting students with NICE. I think we've answered this question, but this asks it a little differently than the others. If the students are in the course, you're going to report those students. If ultimately a student in that course takes NICE and the others take ELA 4, so be it. If the student is in the course, the student is reported. Now, that being said, for next year at least, we don't have guidance for 12-13, but in 11-12, NICE will not be used as an evaluation criteria for teachers. Only teachers teaching grade 4 through 8, ELA and math, will be evaluated using the standard ELA and math state assessments in 11-12, and again, that's by legislation. But to answer the question here as it's put here, if that student is in a course that maps to one of our course numbers, then yes, that student is reported. There are many instances enrolling after the start of the school year, not sitting for the exam in June. Again, sitting for the exam is irrelevant. If that student is enrolled in one of the courses, the student gets reported regardless of how long a period of time the student spent in the course. And as you know, in our course teacher relationship template, we make an opportunity for you to do start and end dates for students. And so if a student started late in the year and ended late in the year, then that's the time frame for that student. But the question here really doesn't have anything to do with whether the student sat for the exam or not. So the answer to the question, should these students be reported as part of the class associated with teaching? Yes. For the student in number two, what we just talked about, then obtains the additional instruction in the following school year. In the following school year, the student would be subject to being reported based on what courses the student was in. If they take a course in the following year similar to or identical to the course in the previous year, then that course would be reported along with the normal course student reporting requirements. So the fact that the student spent some time in a course, took an assessment and didn't pass, so went to, did the course again, actually is somewhat irrelevant. You are reporting courses, teachers that are teaching that course, and students that are in that course. And if it happens in two subsequent years, then it happens in two subsequent years. There are students, next one, Katie. There's some students attending both special ed and CTE programs, but starting these programs on different dates. You should have the entry date in the entry template, the first date the student enters the BOCES. Keep in mind the entry exit codes are for entry into the BOCES. They're not for entry into some specific course. They may be in the future, but for the time being, the 0055 and 0066 are entry and exit from the BOCES, not from a specific course in the BOCES. So what would happen there is the first date the student entered, there'd be an opening code. Students may miss a class or haven't allowed to make up class time with the teacher outside of class. Since class attendance will be used to calculate teacher-student linkage, how should this be made up? Instruction time be recorded while maintaining class absence in the SMS? The attendance policy of the local BOCES should record the time the teacher spent with the student. So it's entirely up to you as to whether you want to use this time or not use this time. If you mark the student present for a period of time that the student is with the teacher, then those minutes should be calculated and included in the minutes reported for that student. If you don't have a normal course of attendance, use in your attendance policy that time, then that you may mark that student absent from the class when you deem them to be absent from class. At this point in time, there is no statewide policy on those attendance issues. So that's entirely a local decision. I think we here in Albany understand that we're going to have to refine our guidance on that and look at attendance a little closer. But for the time being, whatever local policies you have with regard to taking attendance, those are the policies you should use, and those are the ones that would reflect the time between the teacher and the student. Are there any reporting requirements for classes that contain all students for the NYSA? Should they be mapped to the appropriate New York State course code without a corresponding state assessment? I think we've answered this a few times. If the course code, if these students legitimately are in a course that's represented in our course catalog, then those students should be reported, and whether they take the LA, math, or NYSA is something that happens kind of as a separate transaction. If they're in a course with one of our course codes, then they should be reported. In the table of valid locations, there is only one TST, that's one of the local BOCES, of course, reference, and it lists our district superintendent as CSO. Are you saying she will be the principal or that this table needs to be updated? I'm going to give this over to Charlene Swanson, who is here. Ron Danforth is also in the room and may want to comment on it. Charlene, you want to take that?
What we're going to do for BOCES locations is to create locations that we can associate with the administrator that's responsible for a particular program. So our plan is to work with the DSs and their staff, some of you folks, to create those locations so that they'll work well specifically for making the
to do the evaluations for principals that are responsible for a set of students and a set of teachers.
Yeah, my concept is that we talk about districts and schools. A school is an administrative unit, and a school building can contain one school or can contain multiple schools, and a single school can be housed in multiple buildings. For the BOCES, I think we will be looking at programs. You know, you could have a BOCES building with a single program. You could have a BOCES building with multiple programs. So we would look at BOCES programs like we look at schools and districts.
So I guess it means we'd be developing a table and guidance on how to use that table sometime in the near future, Ron?
We would be. We'll have to define with the BOCES help, obviously, what their programs are.
Okay, so I think the short answer to this question is that the system we use for location codes in regular school districts is not fully in place for the BOCES. And as Ron indicated, rather than just replicate what's going on in school districts, there'll be a development effort to be more BOCES specific and hopefully helpful to the BOCES in an ability to track their programs. So we will resolve this issue, and we will get you further guidance as it goes forward.
But right now, don't look for the location.
But right now, the location codes are not there, correct. For students that have taken and passed a course but failed the associated reading exam, who becomes the teacher of record when a student sits for the associated reading exam while no longer enrolled in a course? There are two issues here. First, with regard to your reporting requirements, and actually you're going to report that kid in the course that the kid was in with the student with the teacher that was teaching that course. The question itself has been sent to our policy group. Who needs to make determinations on this. Fortunately, in the next year, as you know, those teachers are not subject to evaluation based on the outcome of the Regents exams, and so there is some time to deal with this. But we do have a policy group. We're going to be giving you their email address later. Some of the questions that you sent to us more appropriately belong in that policy group. We have sent this question to them for their evaluation and ultimate response. So this is kind of outside the scope of data collection, but to the extent that it does relate to data collection, you would be reporting that kid in the original course the student was in according to the various templates that we discussed here today. Students that enter Putnam Northern Westchester BOCES in the spring, April, and May and have not attended school prior to enrolling at BOCES due to anxiety, school phobia, etc., in addition to SS, double him or her up, scheduled for two periods, and of course, and have them sit for a Regents exam in June, how do we complete the fields of teacher record, etc.? Again, I get back to the basics. All of the reasons there I know happen, and it's important for us to serve the needs of these students appropriately, but at the end of the day, that student is in a course, a section. The section lasts for some period of time. If the period of time is double, then that's reflected in the minutes that section is reported for. If the student is in two sections of the same course, then those sections are reported individually, and the time would be accumulated against those two teachers, or if it were the same teacher. So from a data reporting perspective, a lot of what's asked here isn't exactly relevant to anything you need to be concerned about. If you have that kid in a course, in a section, with a teacher, then you're going to report that course, section, teacher, and student. And if that's the case, then the double period doesn't make any difference, really, because the section time would be reported appropriately, if I'm reading this correctly. Again, you can have an opportunity to ask questions later. Katie? Will there be a Q&A document for those who can't participate but would like this info? No, not really. We're not going to print this and send it out. Some of the questions are hard to understand in the context. However, there is going to be a follow-up detailed guidance document that is in progress now. It's being edited. I'm not entirely sure when it will be released, but it's extremely detailed. I'm thinking somewhere about 42 pages long last time I saw it, and I think it would accommodate all the questions that are being asked here today in a final level of detail.
Peter, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, it's Helene.
Helene, could you hold your questions till the end?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, thanks. What are the stipulations for a teacher having students assigned to them in the case of alternative programs that often involve transient students? I'm not sure how to answer that, other than to repeat what I've repeated many, many times today. If you have a student who's in a section with a teacher mapped to one of the course codes from our state catalog, then that student's going to wind up being reported to the extent that student is or is not in that course over any period of time on a start date and end date for the student's enrollment in that course. So whoever wrote this can clarify it later. But again, this should be accommodated just in the course section teacher-student modality that we've been discussing. What happens when students move from program to program within 1 year? Again, if they change courses, is that what you're saying, or change sections within courses, then the templates accommodate that by start dates and end dates for the course and sections. What date exactly tied to CTE teachers' ID numbers for the 2011 school year, 2012 year? What about teachers of integrated academic subjects? We're thinking that 2012 will be the year for the development of common assessments linked to CTE, but do make sure of this case. Now let's separate 2011 from 2012. 2011, there are a set of course codes, none of which are CTE courses. Now, if you make the determination that a CTE course is sufficiently covering a full curriculum in one of those course codes, I suppose you could map that course to a course code and report those students. But for 2011-12, there will be no CTE course data collected, only data related to courses that are in that Appendix A that I referenced earlier. What about teachers in 2012? 2012, we will expand to a full course catalog that will include all CTE courses, but we have absolutely no guidance on that whatsoever. That course catalog is in development now. I think it will be released actually this spring, so we can start taking a look at it and look for some policy guidance on how it will be implemented once we get to 2012-13. But your data requirements in 11-12 do not include CTE reporting. How does the BOCES link student and staff ID numbers to our district-based staff? If your district-based staff, if district-based staff means a BOCES staff member that's teaching off-site, and I'm assuming that's what that means, that they're not at an actual BOCES site. If that teacher is teaching, boy, I'm starting to sound like a broken record, aren't I? If that teacher is teaching one of the courses that's in our course catalog, then that teacher, that course, that section, those students are reported. In terms of the location of that, I think that's what Ron Danforth was referring to earlier. I think our intention for BOCES is not to be so concerned about the buildings that they're in, but rather the programs in which they're engaged.
That's correct.
And so if we have a table that has program codes, not unlike our location codes, that should resolve, I think, what's underlying this question. But we'll get to that later. What is the process for teachers who work with kids to take alternate assessments? Well, I think we answered that many, many times now. If kids are in the course and section that map to our course and section, they're reported. If they're not, they're not. Katie, next one? Or did I miss one? I'm sorry, I missed the middle one. I apologize. You want to go back, Katie? I apologize. Are BOCES students going to be identified by the BOCES student ID or the district ID, BOCES ID? You should have your own local BOCES ID. And I think I mentioned this before, that it's very important that that BOCES ID be unique across the BOCES. That's exactly why you don't want to use district ID. It'd be entirely impossible that two districts are using the same ID for two different kids. And the BOCES has the requirement to make their ID unique across all BOCES programs. Thanks. Point out. I'm sorry I missed that one. How will students who take NICE to be factored into BOCES teacher evaluations for 12-13? We don't know anything about 12-13. Will NICE be used as state tests for the evaluation of teachers of these students? We don't know. Okay, 11-12 is clear. Legislation is clear. The regulations for 12-13 are still in development. The APPR regulations that gave BOCES not need to comply with the APPR evaluation requirements until 2000, I assume that means 11-12 school year. The APPR for the 2011-12 school year has not yet been published as far as I know.
That's correct, yes.
It's in draft form, so I'm not sure how to take that, but I think we can answer the final part of that. How will the teacher evaluation fields be handled for BOCES teachers during the 2011-12 school year? We do know, without regard to the details of APPR, that teachers teaching grade 4 through 8 ELA and math are subject to having state assessments used as part of their evaluation. Now, to the extent you're teaching those courses, again, based on everything we've been saying here today, the course section students and teacher that are in those courses would be reported by the BOCES in the manner that we're discussing here today, and then we would match it up to the assessments those students would be taking. You don't need to do that. If a teacher is employed in a school district but is also employed part-time by BOCES to teach an evening alternative high school program leading to regular high school diploma, how will the part-time BOCES employment be factored into the teacher's APPR evaluation? Once again, from a reporting requirement, you report a teacher. If the teacher is teaching a course that's in our course catalog, then you report that teacher, the section, and the student. So let's look at it from the BOCES perspective. This teacher, the fact that they're part-time is irrelevant. They're teaching a course in your alternative high school. If they're teaching one of the courses that I've mentioned over and over again, then you're going to report them. And then if it happens that they're subject to evaluation based on that course, based on the current legislation, then that would be factored into their evaluation. Are all the templates to be completed only on students enrolled in a course identifying them to say yes? Should a student be included if he does not receive a final grade in one of the course identifying them to say yes? In other words, if he starts the class but then drops out, but yes, you're going to report that student. The student happened to not have a final grade, that's fine, but the student will be included in the rosters because of the start and stop dates on the student enrollment in the course. I believe that's actually the last question that we have. There was one other that we deleted. It had to do with cooperation between and among the regional information centers. Marlene Dominio is online. She is the coordinator for the RICS, and since she hadn't seen these questions in advance, eliminated that particular question. So my apologies to the person who asked that. We will do everything we can to make sure that the RICS cooperate and coordinate on cross-RIC issues, which was the essence of the question. As I said, we do have a new policy-making group that's considering all the questions related to policy on teacher evaluation. Now, I don't want to muddy the waters here because we're responsible for data collection. And that's why I tried to focus on data collection as we're speaking to you here today. There are a zillion open issues on the whole evaluation piece. If you have policy issues that need to be resolved by those folks, please use that email address. And they are writing guidance and making policy on all issues related to teacher evaluation. The data collection piece of this is what we're focused on today, and we'd like to help you be prepared for that. So that concludes the questions that you sent us. I hope we didn't miss any. And we will open it up to questions now. You'll see on your website wait until it comes up, a hand in the lower left-hand corner where you can raise your hand and ask a question. If you raise your hand, we'll see it. We'll call on you. And you need to unmute your phone by #6, is it?
#6.
By #6. We have you all muted. To talk to us, you'll need to hit #6 when we call on you. So if you have questions, I can't see that clearly, so there it is. I'm sorry. TST BOCES?
Gareth?
Yes, I can hear you.
Thank you. What's the reporting requirement for NISA students whose IEPs mandate time spent on basic life skills instruction, such as toileting and grooming, for which there are no course IDs listed yet?
There's no reporting requirement at all.
Okay.
For 11-12.
Control here somewhere.
The arrow? I don't want to disconnect it. I'm sorry. NASA BOCES? Helene? Oh, here.
Yeah, hi. We have a couple of questions. Hey, Peter, Jean Silverman here. How are you?
I'm great, Jean. How are you?
Good. I know this isn't a big issue for a lot of people, but just to hop back for a minute. The question
sure.
about CTE was about the integrated credits. So if we are offering a CTE course that gives an integrated full credit of English or math that is on that list of courses on the list that you gave us, We are assigning then the student to their CTE teacher for CTE and their English integrated English teacher for their credit of English. Is that correct?
I think that would be correct, Jean. Again, you know, the guidance on this is emerging, but as I understand the regulations, I think what you just said would be correct. You would have to probably assign a course and section number that isolates the ELA, in that case, portion of that instruction.
Okay, because I think just about every tech center at every BOCES in the state has integrated academics in almost all their courses, so
yeah,
it will apply to all of us.
To the extent that you make the determination that this is the student's full curriculum in one of the courses that maps to our course codes, then yes, if you make that judgment, then that person gets reported.
Okay, thanks. Actually, SED has made that judgment, has made that judgment in our program approval, so it's already been
okay, then that's consistent, Jean. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Peter.
Okay, and Peter,
We had
a few more questions, and I just want to make sure. We had sent a couple of questions about defining duration and how you count minutes to determine seat time for a student. And
really? I'm sorry, Charlene, we didn't see them. Did you send them to Charlene?
Yeah. It said student management questions on elementary-level teacher course data, and it was a couple of questions on, you know, how do you actually determine how many minutes? I mean, who's determining how many minutes a course is? How are we keeping track of how many minutes the student actually sat in that course? If, let's say, we're taking attendance.
I got the gist of the question. Let me give my take on it, okay? First off, how many minutes the course meets is entirely a local decision. There are minimum course minute requirements to award credits, as you all know. But how a course is constructed and how many minutes the course is conducted is entirely a local decision. So, for example, we know that there are courses that meet for 30 minutes on Monday and 60 minutes on Wednesday and another 30 minutes on Friday. And there's a course duration. When you multiply all that across the entire school year, that gives you the total course duration in minutes. So that's question one. It's completely a local decision, provided it meets the minimum requirements for awarding credits. Secondly, how do you keep track of those minutes? That's a challenge of the student management system folks. We've spoken to them about that, and they're going to have to build minutes into their scheduling packages that go beyond just bell schedules and keep the track of how many minutes each section of each course meets. Thirdly, how do you count the minutes that the student was in that course? Again, I hate to put this off on local decision-making, but it's local decision-making with regard to their attendance policy, as I tried to explain earlier. If the student is marked present for that section for a given day, then all the minutes for that day are going to be counted. If the student is marked absent for that day for that section, then those minutes are not going to be counted. And for the time being, that's the level of granularity at which this can take place. Colleen, did that answer your question?
So, but then you're saying for that section, so it sounds like the teachers are going to have to take attendance at every section.
Well, they do that now. They're required now to do
period
attendance.
Well, in elementary, you're taking it daily attendance.
Yes, I apologize. You're right. It would change the attendance procedures for certain entities. That is correct.
So the other question comes in, you know, we're setting up schedules for elementary, but they're really not necessarily going to follow these schedules because they may do ELA in the morning one day and math in the afternoon and the other, you know, another day. And so we're running into how districts are going to handle this to be accurate.
Yeah, I think you have a very good point, and it's a question that we've thought about a lot. We have some limited guidance on that in the document I was referring to. And I hate to keep putting it on the local decision-making, but in large part it is. I mean, someone that's teaching a traditional common branch class in grade, let's say, 4, 5, 6 and around there, and is teaching all of the mathematics and all of the English language arts to students, that building is going to have to do an ELA course for those students, a math course for that student, assign that same teacher to both of those courses, and estimate an allocated number of minutes that's expected of that teacher to spend every day. I think we're aware of the fact that those minutes shift on a daily basis, but they're going to have to make their best judgment in doing that, and if I were an administrator, I'd be working with the teachers on how to do that to fairly represent the level of effort.
Thank you.
Thanks, Helene. Putnam, Northern Westchester?
Yes, we have classes housed in our local school district.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hold on. That's me. I apologize. Shoot. I just got this off. Damn it. I'm sorry. Okay. Sorry. I thought I had myself unmuted. My sincere apologies to everyone. I'm sorry. Repeat your question, please.
Okay. We sometimes have classes in a BOCES program that are located in a local school building.
Yes.
That would be so that kids can be mainstream. So let's say a high school class is taught predominantly by BOCES teachers, but they go into a mainstream class for math and English.
Yes.
Teacher associated with that kid then for math and English.
Yes.
Yes?
Who is the teacher of record is the question.
The local school district teacher who is not a BOCES employee.
I misunderstood the question. Well, let me rephrase it from what I thought I heard and tell me if I'm hearing this correctly. There's a class going on in District A, and there's a District A teacher teaching that class. Meanwhile, a BOCES teacher comes over and assists in the class in some way, inclusion or whatever it may be. Is that right?
Peter, could we start again?
Yeah, please do. I apologize.
I think it just might be because we weren't geographically close enough to the phone.
Okay.
Okay, here we go.
We have students, the reason that students are in a local district building would be because they might be able to benefit from taking a general ed course like English 10, let's say. The rest of the day they are in classes taught by BOCES staff.
So I have to study for a minute. When you say the English 10, is there a district teacher teaching that class?
Yes.
Okay. All right, go ahead.
That's the question. Is then that local district teacher the teacher of record for a kid who is not a resident of that district?
Yes. Yeah. Now, all of those things of where a course is and where the kids come from kind of fades away when you look at the underlying requirement I was talking about earlier. And that is, if you have a course and section that matches the course catalog, regardless of where it is or who's teaching it, those kids and that teacher need to be reported. So your real question is, who's the reporting entity? And in the case that you just explained, it's the local district needs to report that teacher and those kids for that particular course and section.
Whoever employs the teacher is reporting the course.
Whoever employs the teacher is reporting the course. Thank you, Charlie.
And what student ID number would they use?
They have to assign one. The district would need to assign one.
The district.
So they'd have a BOCES ID and a district of location ID.
Yep.
Yes.
But, Peter, it's Joe. How could that happen if that student is a resident of another district? Not the district in which the course is being taught.
If the student is in a course, Joe, and we may need to think this through, but my first inclination, I think we've discussed this before, if the student is in a course, then that student is in a student management system that creates that course, populates that course, reports grades for that course, reports report cards for that course.
If
they're in that student management system, hold on, let me finish. If they're in that student management system, then they need a student ID that allows them to be in that course.
But that child is owned by the district from which he came for accountability purposes.
Okay, we're not talking accountability, Joe.
But also for reporting purposes.
The accountability rules are already in place. We would deal with accountability in that situation the way we're doing it right now.
Correct.
This is a whole different reporting mechanism. This has to do with two things and two things only.
Now,
hold, Joe, let me finish. This has to do with course grade data. What did the kid get in the course for a grade, and what was the kid's state assessment grade, A, and B, if that teacher is subject to the evaluation regulation, which is not a lot of teachers right now but will grow over time, then an underlying data is used in the teacher's evaluation. This has nothing to do whatsoever with accountability. So if a student is in a course and a section, they need a student ID number that allows them to be reported through that course and section.
But then you're telling me a student can have a simultaneous enrollment record in more than one school district.
It happens now. That's not unusual.
Okay.
Happens all the time.
The same student may be reported by multiple entities depending upon the requirements for reporting that student.
If I've already answered your question, would you put your hands down because I can't tell who we've called them on and who isn't. And that's what I know we did, and Putnam we did. I think Erie 1 might be up next. Erie 1? Erie 1, pound 6 should unmute your phone. Maybe we lost them. Let's go on to Broome, Tioga, and we'll come back to Erie 1 if we didn't lose them.
Erie 1's here. Can you hear me now?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Okay, go ahead, Erie. Broome, hold on. We'll get to you in a moment.
I have a question about suspension programs. Listening to you, I would assume that while we have the student in a suspension program, that we are responsible for reporting for that student. Is that correct?
Teaching a course, and that meets the requirements, yeah.
That's a very good question. Are they, when they're in suspension, are they being taught the course that they've suspended from?
Yes. We have a variety of programs. The long-term suspension program, they are being taught the course by our teachers for different lengths of time. That's one situation. Another one is a short-term, and they're teaching using the material sent over by the schools. That's for only 5 days. And then mm-hmm. there's a home hospital program that has a wide variety of students out, and our teachers will go into the community or to the homes to teach. And sometimes that's for a short time, and sometimes for a long time.
Okay, I think I know the answer to these questions, but I'm not going to venture to say it in front of the entire state until I check this out. I think I understand this. It's not unlike some issues we have with kids that are sick and out for a week or two and how we deal with that. So what we're going to do is take your question and get some guidance from the policy folks, and we will respond to you. So if you would email Charlene Swanson at cswanson@mail.nysed.gov so that we know who you are, we will get the answer to your question. I think I know it, but I don't want to say it in front of the entire state if I happen to not have it 100% correct, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for asking the question. Appreciate it. Who are we up to? Erie 1, I think. Oh, no, that was Erie 1, right? Broome? Was that Broome or Erie? I still see a hand up at Erie, so we'll go to them if they haven't already asked their question.
You've already asked the question.
Okay, thank you. Broome, did you get to ask your question? Broome, Tioga, if you do pound 6, we should be able to hear you.
Can you hear us?
Yes, we do.
Okay, thank you. My question comes around, again, that idea of a student who is a full-time BOCES student located in a classroom in a district, which may have 4 or 5 different district students that have come to BOCES in that classroom. They then go out for a course, and in essence, if the teacher of record will be that course, that teacher who is providing that instruction, it will close down all of integrated programming for the future because that teacher of record no longer will be willing to provide that service.
Okay, that's not a data question. It's an unintended consequence of law and regulation question.
I understand that. My question then is, where do I go to give that information to someone?
Well, keep in mind that what we're discussing here today is a product of legislation. This we didn't sit here in Albany in the State Ed Department and concoct this. This was done across the street in the Assembly and Senate and the Governor's Office. So I guess if you feel that there are negative implications to this, the best place to start would be with your legislators.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for the question. I don't see any additional hands up. Let me just summarize by thanking all of you. These were very, very good questions. We appreciate it. Some of them we will pass on to our policy folks. Could you put that last slide of the PowerPoint back up, Katie? Okay, this is a new group here in Albany that's responsible for looking through the policy implications of what's going on in this entire data collection process. So please feel free to email them. Additionally, this is now our third conference call with the BOCES. We had that overview of the PowerPoint a couple of weeks ago, the one that got interrupted by someone who put us on hold, as you recall. Then we went through detailed field-by-field analysis with the with your vendors, and we hope that we clarified very specifically what data fields need to be collected. We took your questions today, but we do want to continue in these difficult times for all of us to be as responsive as we can be. So should you have additional questions or additional concerns, please contact us. If we need another hour on a phone like this, we would be glad to do it. You can contact Charlene Swanson if you have additional questions, and if they mount up to a point where we need an additional call, we'll notify everyone. In the meanwhile, thank you very much for participating today.
Peter?
Okay, one at a time. Wait, one at a time. I heard Don first. Don?
Hi, it's Mary.
Oh, Mary, hi. Go ahead.
Hey, Peter, we just want to go back to the kind of the question that Joe had asked a little bit earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Simultaneously enrolled, we're thinking it's actually three districts at the same time. If the student is a member of District A, then the BOCES, which you can consider District B, but is in a program at another district, District mm-hmm. C, in which that student is taught in a mainstream class. Now you've got three enrollment records. How is that going to work?
Well, from the teacher evaluation and course reporting perspective, the District C is, from what I can hear you, District C is teaching the course. Is that right? There's a District C teacher in a District C building?
Yeah, District C would be teaching a course.
So District C is responsible for reporting those data, which means they are reporting participation in a course data on students that aren't technically, that they don't technically own, but are there for the course. If the student is in that course, the student has to be associated with that teacher and reported in the usual teacher-staff-student relationship templates.
Using the 55
and 60. Peter, I think the issue is they would be recorded in the course information, but they don't have an enrollment in that district.
I don't think we have an edit check against enrollment in district when we have courses reported, Mary. But let me go through that with the guys here and try to clarify that for all of the BOCES people at least at the next tech standards meeting. But I don't believe that is going to stop you. Tom, do you know that? That's not going to stop them from reporting these data, is it?
Well, they're enrolled in that district primarily for instructional purposes, right? So student...
I think that's the issue, Tom, that they're a student in District A. District A sends them over to BOCES, so now they have an entry at a 0055 in the BOCES, but now the BOCES sends them over to District C to take a course. I think that's okay. They don't need an enrollment record in
District
C.
District C would need it. If District C is reporting data, they would need to have an enrollment record that they're instructing that student.
And what enrollment is that? Is that a 011?
No,
it's 55. The 55.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So you can have multiple 55, even though it's not a BOCES?
Correct.
Yeah.
Right.
So
I think the definition of 55 has expanded for enrolled in a district for instructional purposes in order to support the evaluation process.
Oh, okay. So a child can have multiple 55s in multiple VETS codes.
Correct.
That's correct.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary. Thanks, Don. Anything else, folks? Thank you very much. Much for participating, the BOCES, Rick people, you know, we'll go through this again when we see you in a week or two. And the rest of the component BOCES folks, should you need anything, we'll try to do this again. Thanks. Bye now.